Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakrose. Sarah Gordle, Public Health. Increased COVID-19 community spread, especially among young people. Increased COVID-19 illness continues in Cerro Gordo County, a press release from Cerro Gordo Public Health says. There are currently 72 lab-confirmed cases in Cerro Gordo County. 44 of them were identified in June. There's been a significant spike in illness within the young adult population, 18 to 40 years old, according to the press release. Over half the cases in June have been in this age range. There is no specific event or location that is connecting the cases, indicating increased community spread. Health officials would like to remind everyone that COVID-19 is still prevalent in the community, and it is imperative that members of the public continue with prevention efforts to help slow the spread of the virus. If you are over the age of 65, have underlying pre-existing medical conditions, or are pregnant, limit your interactions with others and avoid public settings. Stay home if you are not feeling well. Wear a cloth facial covering in all public settings. Frequently wash your hands with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cough or sneeze into a tissue or your elbow. Avoid touching your mouth, nose, and eyes. Limit your face-to-face interactions. Avoid large gatherings. CG Public Health continues to contact all lab-confirmed cases. During this call, public health care workers provide information about taking care of their illness at home, along with isolation guidance. In addition, close contacts are identified so exposure notification can be made for these people as well. A close contact is defined as being within 6 feet of distance or less with a positive COVID-19 case for 15 minutes or more. The team then makes notification to those individuals to discuss information about their exposure and quarantine instructions. Persons placed in quarantine due to exposure must stay home for 14 days since their last exposure from the person diagnosed with COVID-19. The quarantine applies regardless of whether they seek testing and it is negative. CG Public Health continues to stress the importance of contact tracing. If you are contacted by CG Public Health, you must follow their quarantine and isolation guidance. We make these calls, and many times the person on the other end is shocked of their diagnosis or exposure, says Brian Hanf, Director of Public Health at CG Public Health. Decreasing the spread of COVID-19 requires community commitment to social distancing and prevention practices. I know that by working together, we can have a positive impact if we follow the guidelines. Mercy One North Iowa employee tests positive for COVID-19. A nurse at Mercy One North Iowa's medical center has tested positive for COVID-19. As a result of community spread, a colleague of Mercy One North Iowa has contracted COVID-19, Marketing Director Stephanie Deckert said in an email Thursday afternoon. According to Deckert, Mercy One is following current clinical guidance and having the employee quarantine as a result. In addition, Deckert said that Mercy One is working to curb risks wherever possible. We are continuing mandatory screening at entrances, requiring masks for all individuals, encouraging physical distancing, and implementing extra cleaning measures, Deckert assured. We ask for your thoughts and prayers for our colleague and thank you for your continued support. Though Mercy One did not specifically say a nurse had tested positive for COVID-19, the employee's Facebook profile confirmed that they worked at the medical center as a nurse. On Wednesday, Heritage Care and Rehabilitation confirmed that a staff member at the facility had tested positive for COVID-19 and was quarantining as well. According to Kara Koster, a marketing consultant for the ABCM Corporation, the parent company of Heritage, the case came from facility-wide testing that the company did this past week, though not all of the results are in yet. She then added that despite the fact that Heritage just did testing, the 47-year-old ABCM facility will retest residents and staff after the result. In the past 2 weeks in Cerro Gordo County, there has been a 70% increase in COVID-19 cases. That statistic was shared by Mason City Mayor Bill Schickel during a press conference on Wednesday afternoon, where he reminded residents to continue to take physical distancing seriously and wear masks when out and about. North Iowa baseball suspends season due to COVID-19. Another team has temporarily suspended its season due to COVID-19. According to Zarin Eggsdahl of the KIOW radio station, the North Iowa High School baseball team in Buffalo Center on Thursday has suspended its season due to some of the players reporting symptoms related to COVID-19. At this time, out of caution and with the guidance of the Public Health Department, North Iowa will be suspending baseball activities until at least Monday, June 29th, the North Iowa Community School District said on its Facebook page. The North Iowa baseball Twitter account reported that one test has already come back negative and is hoping to be back playing baseball next week. Looking at the guidelines allow for us to go and do things, but it was precautionary, Superintendent Joe Erickson said. We worked with public health, and their recommendation was to step back for a few days, wait until we've got the results of testing back before we take the next steps. Erickson said the testing could take up to 3 days to get results back. My hope would be we've got, in theory, a game on Monday evening that 2 o'clock would kind of be a deadline for. If we haven't heard back that it's negative at that point, then we're probably looking at postponing Monday night's game too, Erickson said. The Bisons earned their first win Wednesday night against West Hancock and played Forest City on Monday. Last week, the squad played area teams Garner, Hayfield, Ventura, and Northwood Kensett as well. North Iowa is the latest of a growing list of teams in the state of Iowa that have suspended their seasons. Dubuque-Wallert, Iowa Falls-Alden, Galen Catholic, Applington-Parkersburg, Woodbine, and Central Lyon-George Little Rock have all suspended seasons due to COVID-19. Senator Joni Ernst tells EPA director to trash small refinery waivers. U.S. Senator Joni Ernst has told the EPA administration to just trash 52 small refinery waivers under consideration by the agency because they have a devastating impact on Iowa's renewable fuels industry. Although Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Andrew Wheeler is upholding the letter of the law, Ernst said allowing petroleum refiners to be exempted from the renewable fuel standard would not be in the spirit of the law. When I cornered Wheeler Wednesday, I said, those petitions, you shouldn't even be taking petitions from the oil refiners, Ernst told reporters Thursday. I used the exact words. I said they should be thrown in the garbage can. Ernst, who has been a supporter of Iowa's biofuels industry and a vocal critic of the waivers that exempt refineries from RFS requirements, has been challenged to call for Wheeler's resignation by Teresa Greenfield, her Democratic opponent in the fall election. I have called months and months ago. I called on him to resign if he wasn't upholding the RFS, Ernst said. The RFS requires transportation fuel sold in the United States to contain a minimum volume of renewable fuels. In October 2019, Ernst called for the EPA to change its policy to fulfill a promise made by President Donald Trump to increase the amount of ethanol and biodiesel used in gasoline. Let's make sure this gets done, and if not, we're going back to the president and say, Andrew Wheeler is the one who is not following through with your commitment to farmers. You need to get rid of him, Ernst said last fall. The Greenfield campaign called that a so far empty threat. Ernst said that as much as she hates to admit it, Wheeler is following the law, but he's really walking a tightrope with the spirit of the law. Ernst expects the matter to end up in court. In the meantime, we're just going to have a big legal mess on our hands, Ernst said. But my simple solution, throw them away. According to the Greenfield campaign, about 43,000 people in Iowa make a living in some way connected to ethanol. Due in part to less travel during the coronavirus pandemic, demand for ethanol has dropped and production is down by about 50%. Two North Iowa men sent to federal prison on meth convictions. Two North Central Iowa men have received lengthy federal prison sentences for dealing or conspiring to deal methamphetamine. Christopher Paul Hansen, 30, of Lakota, was sentenced Thursday to 14 years after pleading guilty to conspiracy to distribute at least 1,500 grams of meth and possessing a firearm as a drug user. In his plea agreement, Hansen admitted to distributing the meth in and around north central Iowa. In September 2018, a vehicle was stopped, and in the vehicle was approximately 10 pounds of methamphetamine, part of which was packaged for delivery to Hansen for redistribution. On September 26, 2018, Hansen's residence was searched. Law enforcement seized drug paraphernalia, drug packaging materials, drug ledgers, marijuana, methamphetamine, and guns, including a rifle and a pistol, along with ammunition for both guns, according to a press release issued by the U.S. Attorney's Office in Iowa. Hansen was sentenced to 168 months imprisonment. He must also serve a 5-year term of supervised release after the prison term. Demetrius Johnson, 34, of Fort Dodge, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to distribute meth and possession of a firearm by a prohibited person, and received more than 24 years in prison. Johnson admitted he was distributing meth from the fall of 2017 to on or about August 2019. In December 2019, Johnson sold meth on 2 separate occasions in Mason City, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office press release. On January 15, 2018, law enforcement searched Johnson's Mason City storage locker and apartment where they seized methamphetamine, large quantities of marijuana, and 3 handguns, one of which was loaded. Johnson left Mason City and moved to Fort Dodge, where he was hiding from law enforcement, pending his parole violation for another drug-dealing offense. On August 1, 2019, Johnson was found in Fort Dodge. At the time of his arrest, law enforcement noticed a strong odor of marijuana, which led them to search his residence, finding approximately 4.5 pounds of pure methamphetamine, as well as another handgun. Johnson has 3 prior felony drug convictions and multiple convictions for violent offenses. Johnson was sentenced to 292 months on the meth charge and 120 months on the gun charges to run concurrently. He must also serve a 10-year term of supervised release after the prison term. There is no parole in the federal prison system. Rescue group seizes 58 cats from Mitchell County hoarder. The Animal Rescue League of Iowa's mobile response team spent hours removing dozens of sick cats and kittens from a Mitchell County home on Wednesday after being asked by local law enforcement to assist in a hoarding case. When the ARL team entered the home, cats and kittens were everywhere, and the house was dirty with urine and feces, according to a press release sent out by the ARL. The release did not say where the home was located. After securing the kittens, the team drove back to Des Moines, where an emergency care team was ready to assess the animals to determine treatment plans. Nearly all of the cats, from adults to week-old kittens, were suffering from severe upper respiratory infections. Some of the kittens' eyes were matted shut, and others were so congested they struggled to breathe. All had fleas and ear mites, and one kitten died of apparent dehydration and starvation. Several of the cats and kittens had lesions consistent with ringworm, which requires the animals to be quarantined for several weeks. Mason City received state award for arena project. Mason City was one of 2 local governments recognized with a Main Street, Iowa Game Changer Award for a revitalization project. Mayor Bill Schickel and City Administrator Aaron Burnett received the award in a small ceremony on Thursday at the same multipurpose arena that Main Street, Iowa was recognizing. Main Street Mason City President Melissa Fabian and Executive Director Emily Ginberg presented the award on behalf of the state organization and shared an announcement that read, "This project is a catalyst for a significant amount of downtown development with long-lasting economic benefit. Southbridge Mall has been reimagined and is once again a downtown destination." The award was one of 4 for Mason City, along with an exceptional special events award for the Haunted Historic Building Tour, a leadership award given to Fabian, and a Business of the Year award for Market 124's Katie Wold. Cedar Rapids was the other community to win the Game Changer Award. Mason City veteran welcomed home after months in hospital. A Mason City man received the warmest of welcomes home Wednesday evening. Ron Dannon, 73, teared up after dozens of family members and friends drove by his home in a surprise parade on Willowbrook Drive after he spent 4 months in the hospital. Wednesday was the first day since February that Dannon had been home. Earlier in the day, he was discharged from Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center's West Campus. He was admitted into Mercy One North Iowa on February 21st for bilateral pneumonia that quickly worsened and resulted in intubation. He was unresponsive for weeks, his daughter Kylie Logan of Grimes said, adding that he tested negative for COVID-19 twice. He had a tracheotomy but remained sedated and lost more than 40 pounds. Dannon was later transferred from Mercy One North Iowa to Select Specialty Hospital in Des Moines to be weaned off his tracheostomy and begin recovery. Logan said visitor restrictions related to the coronavirus forced Dannon's family to rely on video calls for infrequent updates on her father's condition during his hospitalization. On April 24th, Dannon returned to Mason City to work with physical, occupational, and speech therapists at West Campus, where family could conduct window visits. The window visits were convenient when it came time to celebrate Dannon's 73rd birthday, Logan said. She invited members of the St. James Church Choir, a choir in which Dannon belongs, to sing for him, and the family shared cake with him from opposite sides of the window. Logan said her father is a Vietnam War veteran and a Purple Heart recipient. He has faced near death before and is a true fighter, she said. We are so blessed to be bringing him home this week. Dannon said the welcome home gesture was a total surprise, but a good one. Logan just told me to come sit outside, Dannon said. Once he made his way to the driveway, he was greeted by balloons, signs, and even an inflatable panda. One neighbor, a fellow veteran, also made a giant banner and hung it on Dannon's fence in honor of his return. Then, one by one, cars filled with friends and family cruised past with waves, honking horns, and lots of smiling faces. It was wonderful, said Dannon. I was really surprised. There were so many people I hadn't seen in a while. Along with Logan and family, Dannon's son Ryan and his family were also on hand, as well as neighbors who'd stepped outside to join the Dannons in celebrating. Dannon will receive home health care and physical therapy to regain some of his lost muscle strength routinely as he adjusts to life back home with his wife, Leilani. He said he's ready for a good night's sleep in his own bed. Scam alert. Mercy One name being used in fraudulent check scam. Mercy One North Iowa and the Mason City Police Department are advising the public that if something seems to be too good to be true, it probably is. A press release from Mercy One North Iowa Medical Center states that it was recently made aware its name and address are being used in a fraudulent check scheme. People who receive a suspicious or unexpected check from Mercy One, especially those who have never been patients, should not deposit the check and report the incident to local authorities. According to the release, the scheme was discovered earlier this week when three individuals, all living in Texas, received FedEx packages containing a check and indicating they originated from Mercy One North. The individuals were suspicious and called Mercy One North Iowa to verify. Those who are unsure if they've been a patient or have questions should call Mercy One North Iowa's billing department at 866-494-3001 and choose option 2 for verification. The Federal Trade Commission offers helpful tips and information on their site, consumer.ftc.gov. For more information on fake check scams, visit consumer.ftc.gov/blog/2020/02/ftc-bottom-line-fake-checks-scams. Mason City native uses year's longest day to support Alzheimer's research. Reed McManigal wants a future without Alzheimer's disease for his children. McManigal, a 2003 Mason City High School graduate, and his wife, Christina, have family members who have had the disease or provided care for those with it. When you see it firsthand, it's pretty miserable, he said. McManigal, 35, an account executive at Holmes Murphy & Associates, lives in Des Moines with his wife and their two children, Banks, 3, and Faye, 22 months. In April, McManigal, an Alzheimer's Association Iowa chapter board member, decided to launch a The Longest Day fundraiser for the association after many of its in-person events were canceled due to COVID-19. The longest day is the day with the most light, the summer solstice on June 20th. On Saturday, McManigal and advocates around the world participated in an activity of their choice to raise funds and awareness for Alzheimer's care, support, and research. He originally planned to raise funds and awareness by participating in the Half Ironman race in June in Des Moines. But when that event was rescheduled, he decided to bike 150 miles from his home in Des Moines to his childhood home in Mason City. "It was a blast," he said. "I'd do it all over again." McManigal left Des Moines at 5 a.m. Saturday on bike with a couple of neighbors, while his father drove his truck behind them with an extra bicycle, cooler, and other equipment. The men rode about 80 miles in 4 hours before making their first stop. From there, the stops got longer and the ride got a lot more fun, McManigal said, comparing it to a mini Ragbri or the Register's annual Great Bicycle Ride across Iowa. About 50 miles from Mason City, McManigal's brother, Jack Esser, joined them. They ate lunch at the Corner Lounge in Belmont, drank a beer at Matt's place in Garner, and made stops in Ventura and Clear Lake before finishing their adventure in Mason City, where his parents and grandparents reside. McManigal said his late grandfather lived in Ventura and his father and stepmother live in Clear Lake. "All in all, it took us 12 hours, but we went more than halfway in 4 hours, so we slowed down quite a bit," he said. McManigal said the best part about the day was he got to see his whole family while raising money for a cause that's important to all of them. He initially hoped to raise $10,000 for the Alzheimer's Association, and that goal was quickly achieved, so he increased it to $20,000. "He surpassed his second goal of $20,000 the week of the ride," he said. As of Wednesday, he's raised $22,351, and McManigal said there is still time to contribute to his fundraiser. The Longest Day fundraising event coincides with Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month in June. Alzheimer's is a progressive disease that affects memory, thinking, and behavior. Despite coronavirus slowdown, Iowa lottery revenue exceeds projections. They won't top the record-setting numbers from a year ago, but Iowa Lottery Authority revenues will exceed projections for the fiscal year ending June 30th, despite a coronavirus-related slowdown in sales. Lottery game sales increased by $15.4 million and proceeds grew by $6.3 million, lottery officials told the board Tuesday. Prizes were $19.4 million ahead of budget. Through the first three quarters of fiscal 2020, lottery sales were running 1.8% ahead of the record pace in fiscal 2019, but in March were nearly $2 million short of the budgeted expectation of $30.9 million. Since then, lottery game sales have seemed to have stabilized, CEO Matt Strawn told the board. With 1 week remaining in the fiscal year, Strawn said Iowa Lottery will meet and exceed budgeted and projected numbers for gross sales and revenue transfers to the state. Gross sales were budgeted to be $346.5 million. At the end of May, they were $335 million. Total proceeds were budgeted to be $72 million, but were $73 million at the end of the last full month. And prizes, which were budgeted at $209.9 million, were running at $213 million at the end of May. While the numbers may not look as impressive as those posted last year, Strawn said he was proud of the lottery team's accomplishments in a year that started with challenges to the national lotto draw games and is ending with a public health emergency. Last fiscal year's record sales of $390.9 million were fueled in part by major jackpots in both Powerball and Mega Millions. The Mega Millions jackpot grew to $1.54 billion until a winning ticket was bought October 23, 2018 in South Carolina. Powerball saw a jackpot run up to $768.4 million before it was claimed in Wisconsin on March 27, 2019. Overall, the Iowa Lottery generated a record $92.8 million in proceeds for the state and $241.9 million in prizes. Sales commissions to lottery retailers totaled $25.4 million, also a record. Last year was an extraordinary year, Chairwoman Mary Youngy of Cedar Rapids said, but I think we really should be happy with the results. The board also elected new leadership for fiscal 2021. Sherry Hansen of Ankeny, a tax manager, and John Quinn of Urbandale, the Waukee police chief, will serve as chair and vice chair. Families of three deceased workers sue Tyson over Iowa outbreak. The families of three workers who died after contracting the coronavirus and Iowa meat plant outbreak sued Tyson Foods and its top executives Thursday, saying the company knowingly put employees at risk and lied to keep them on the job. The lawsuit alleges that Tyson officials were aware the virus was spreading at the Waterloo pork processing plant by late March or early April, but kept that information from employees and the public. As the outbreak grew, the company failed to implement safety measures, allowed some sick and exposed employees to remain on the production line, and falsely assured workers and the public that the plant was safe, the suit alleges. Tyson intended by these false representations to deceive workers in the Waterloo facility and to induce them to continue working despite the uncontrolled COVID-19 outbreak at the plant and the health risks associated with working, according to the lawsuit, which was filed in Black Hawk County District Court. Tyson spokesman Gary Mickelson said the company was saddened by the deaths and that its top priority is the health and safety of our workers. He said Tyson has implemented safety measures that meet or exceed federal guidelines. Meatpacking plants have been hotspots for coronavirus because of their crowded conditions, prompting several to temporarily close. Thousands of workers have become infected and several dozen have died. The largest union representing meatpacking workers said Thursday that more than 14,000 employees at unionized plants have been infected with coronavirus and 65 have died. Meat companies, including Smithfield Foods and JBS USA, and retailers such as Amazon and Walmart, have been sued by the families of workers who died from coronavirus. But the lawsuit filed Thursday against Tyson may be the first involving multiple victims at one workplace during the pandemic, according to news reports. Last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill into law shielding businesses and healthcare providers from legal claims from people exposed to the virus, retroactive to January 1st. But the law has exceptions for injuries that result in hospitalization and death, and appears unlikely to block the case from moving forward. The lawsuit seeks damages for the estates of employees Sadika Buljic, 58, who died on April 18th, Reberiano Garcia, 60, who died on April 23rd, and Jose Ayala, Jr., 44, who died on May 25th. Waterloo attorneys Tom Frericks and John Rausch and the Spence Law Firm in Wyoming are representing the families. At least two other Waterloo workers have died after contracting the virus, which infected more than 1,000 of the plant's 2,800 workers and has devastated the broader community. With illnesses mounting, Tyson refused calls from local leaders to close the plant for several days and lobbied the governor to keep it open, the suit alleges. The county sheriff, who visited the plant April 10th, has said he was shaken by seeing workers in crowded conditions without face coverings and pressed Tyson to close. The plant is Tyson's largest pork facility and can process around 20,000 hogs per day. Iowa's Occupational Safety and Health Administration inspected the plant April 20th in response to complaints and said earlier this month it found no violations. The plant closed 2 days after the inspection before reopening with new safety measures in early May. In addition to damages for pain and suffering and loss of income, the lawsuit seeks punitive damages to punish Tyson for an incorrigible, willful, and wanton disregard for workplace safety and to send a message to other companies. The lawsuit names the company as well as Chairman John H. Tyson, CEO Noel White, spokeswoman Liz Croston, and several other executives and plant supervisors. Its claims include gross negligence and fraudulent misrepresentation. John H. Tyson asserted in a newspaper ad in April that the food supply chain is breaking due to plant closures and warned that customers would see meat shortages at grocery stores. The lawsuit claims those warnings were exaggerated and notes that Tyson's pork exports to China, including some from the Waterloo plant, increased significantly that month. The lawsuit makes an explosive claim that Tyson has denied previously, that the company allowed workers and subcontractors from another Iowa plant that had closed due to a coronavirus outbreak to begin working in Waterloo in April. Plant supervisors told employees that their sick co-workers had the flu and warned them not to discuss coronavirus at work, the suit alleges. One man who vomited while on the production line was allowed to keep working, it claims. You are listening to the reading of the Mason City Globe-Gazette for Thursday, June 25th, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now, let's turn to today's obituaries. Betty E. Wicks, born December 30th, 1926, died June 23rd, 2020. Betty E. Wicks, 93, of Mason City, passed away on Tuesday, June 23rd, at Heritage Care Center. A funeral service will be held on Saturday, June 27th at 10 a.m. at Major Erickson Funeral Home, 111 North Pennsylvania, with Reverend Paul Bustrom from First Christian Church officiating. A visitation will be on Friday, June 26th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Interment will be at Elmwood St. Joseph Cemetery. Online condolences may be left for the family at majorericksonfuneralhome.com. And Erickson is spelled E-R-I-C-K-S-O-N. Betty Elaine Wicks was born on December 30, 1926, in Lutheran Hospital in Des Moines, the daughter of John and Marie Enos Johnson. Betty graduated from East High School in Des Moines in 1945. Betty worked at Central Life Insurance Company for 7.5 years in Des Moines. During that time, she married Leonard Wicks at the University Christian Church in Des Moines on September 16, 1950. 1.5 years later, they moved to Perry, where Leonard was employed at Holcomb Pharmacy. In October 1954, they moved to Mason City, where Leonard owned and operated Wicks Pharmacy, and Betty worked for their business part-time when needed. Family came first in her life, along with friends from First Christian Church, love of the Lord, and many longtime friends. Leonard and Betty had many trips in their mini RV to California, Arizona, Texas, and many other destinations. Betty was an avid fan of the Mohawks, Hawkeyes, Twins, and Vikings. She loved watching birds and squirrels by sight and sound in her yard. Betty also enjoyed writing letters and receiving them. Betty volunteered for many years, taking ladies to get groceries, doctor's appointments, and out to lunch. In the later years, she drove Children for Human Services from their foster homes to visit family all over Iowa. For 28 years, she served once a month at the community kitchen, lining up faithful members from First Christian Church to help. Betty loved her church, where she was a Sunday school teacher and Sunday school superintendent. She served on the church board, chaired several committees, and led the Lydia Circle for 20 years. Betty is survived by her children, Judy Allman and spouse Scott, and John Wicks and spouse Mary. Grandchildren, Jill Allman, Ben Wicks, Jenna Olson and spouse Josh, Andrea Holdeman and spouse Jason, and Tyler Wicks. Great-grandchildren, Grace, Olivia, and Sawyer Halderman, Amelia, Audrey, and Harrison Olson, and Olivia Allman, and one sister-in-law, Beulah Nichols. Betty was preceded in death by her husband, Leonard, parents, John and Marie Johnson, brother, Jack Johnson and his wife, Joan, sister, Helen Shanahan and her husband, Jim, and two siblings in infancy, Norma Marie Johnson and Jerry Claude Johnson. Edna A. Waters. Edna A. Waters, 87, of Swaledale, died on Monday, June 22nd, at her home. A funeral mass will be held at 10 a.m. Tuesday, June 30th, at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church, 305 Elm Street East in Rockwell. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Monday, June 29th, at the Sacred Heart Catholic Church, with a scriptural wake service beginning at 6:30 p.m., followed by a time of sharing. Interment will be held in the Pleasant Valley Township Cemetery in Swaledale. Memorials may be directed to Mercy One North Iowa Hospice, 232 2nd Street Southeast, Mason City, Iowa, 50401. Terry Toad Wayne Hinkle. Terry Toad Wayne Hinkle, 62, of Clarion, passed away Thursday, June 11th. Funeral services for Terry Hinkle will be held at 1:30 p.m. on Saturday, June 27th, at the Clarion Church of Christ, 420 North Main Street in Clarion, with Pastor Warren Curry officiating. Visitation for Terry Hinkle will be held on Friday, June 26th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at Ewing Funeral Home, 1801 Central Avenue East in Clarion. Those in attendance will be asked to follow social distancing guidelines and encouraged to wear a face covering. Area Roundup. Mason City Baseball wins doubleheader at home. Pitching was on display in Mason City on Wednesday night as Mohawks pitchers allowed just two runs in a doubleheader sweep of Des Moines East at Roosevelt Stadium. In the first game, senior Bradley Vaith pitched a complete game, striking out nine batters and allowing only five hits en route to a 4-2 victory. In the nightcap, senior Connor Weinman matched Faith's performance in the first game, pitching a seven-inning shutout and allowing just three hits and striking out three in a 5-0 win. "We got fantastic starting pitching tonight from two seniors," said Mohawks head coach Troy Rude. Bradley Vaith and Connor Weinman both threw complete games, and Alex Gold had another great night at the plate with a home run and a double. Gold led the Mohawks with two RBIs in addition to a homer and a double. Sophomore Carter Thomas also had two hits for Mason City in the 4-2 win. In the second game, senior Avery Melman led the Mohawks' eight-hit attack with a double and a single and two RBIs. Freshman Alex Dietz also had two hits for the Mohawks. Mason City improved to 5-2 with the doubleheader sweep. Elsewhere in baseball, Newman Catholic 17, Rockford 1. The Knights scored early and often, downing the Warriors 17-1 on the road. Coming off its only loss of the season, a 4-0 shutout at the hands of Columbus Catholic on Tuesday, the Knights scored at least one run in every inning, highlighted by an 8-run sixth inning. Senior Sam Kratz went the distance for the Knights, striking out 15 batters and walking only one. He allowed only three hits. The Knights improved to 5-1. West Fork 4, Central Springs 3. The Warhawks improved to a 3-3 with the one-run victory at home, while the Panthers dropped to 3-4 on the season. Six players had a hit for West Fork, and senior Dylan Shader recorded the win with four innings of work. Junior Jacob Washington came on in relief for the Warriors. Sophomore Chase Birding had two hits for Central Springs while taking the loss on the mound in seven innings of work. Garner Hayfield Ventura, 9, Bishop Garrigan, 1. Senior right-hander Jordan Upmeyer allowed just one run on four hits as the Cardinals handled the Bears 9-1 in Garner. Upmeyer had help at the plate as the Cardinals had nine hits, including three doubles. Three GHV players collected two hits, including seniors Jared Shaw and Landon Dahlbeck and junior Kevin Myers. The Cardinals scored all of their runs in the first four innings, including a three-run first inning. The Bears' lone run came in the fourth inning. GHV improved to a 4-2 with the win, while Bishop Garrigan remained winless at 0-5. Osage 13, North Butler 0. The Green Devils earned their first win of the year, scoring all of their runs in the fourth and fifth innings to improve to 1-4. It took Osage sophomore Tyler Oberfell just 56 pitches to put the Bearcats away in the five-inning shutout. He recorded two strikeouts and allowed just three hits in the victory. At the plate, juniors Spencer Crabb and Keaton Muller collected two hits apiece, while each had a stolen base. One of Muller's hits was a double. St. Ansgar 7, Nashua Plainfield 4. The Saints kept their perfect season alive at 6-0 with a hard-fought 7-4 victory on the road. Senior John May allowed two runs on two hits and four innings of work to earn the win. Junior Justin Horgan relieved May and allowed two runs and two hits. After falling behind 4-2 after five innings, St. Ansgar scored five runs in the last three innings for the win. Spirit Lake 20, Forest City 18. In a game where the score was more in line with a football game, the Indians came out on the short end of the extra-inning slugfest. Forest City jumped out to a 13-5 lead after four innings, but Spirit Lake plated 15 runs in the final four frames, including two in the top of the eighth inning for the win. The Indians collected 10 hits in the loss, including two apiece by sophomores Reese Moore and Truman Knutson and senior Kagan Benton. Moore hit a home run and had four RBIs. North Iowa 3, West Hancock 2. The Eagles could only muster one hit and lost a close one on the road and fell to 1-3 on the season. After playing North Iowa to a 2-2 tie after four innings, the Bison scored the game winner in the fifth inning and held on the rest of the way. Sophomore Braden Walk had the lone hit for West Hancock. Dunkerton 6, Riceville 5. The Wildcats jumped out to a 4-2 lead after two innings, but couldn't hold on in 10 innings to fall to 2-3 on the season. Riceville took a 5-4 lead in the top of the fifth inning, but Dunkerton scored a run in the bottom of the seventh to force extra innings. The Raiders scored in the bottom of the 10th inning for the walk-off win. Senior Judge Losey collected two hits for the Wildcats, while senior Sully Fair and junior Watson Fair had a hit apiece. Algona 12, St. Edmund 5. The Bulldogs held a 7-5 lead heading into the top of the 7th inning when they put the game away with five runs. Algona had five players with one hit and scored eight earned runs in improving to 3-2. In softball, Mason City 11, Des Moines East 5, Mason City 10, Des Moines East 9. The Mohawks improved to 4-5 overall and 4-4 in the CIML Iowa Conference with a doubleheader sweep of Des Moines East in Mason City. In the first game, Mason City held a 5-4 lead heading into its half of the fourth inning when the Mohawks erupted for four runs to put the game away. In the nightcap, the Mohawks scored four runs in the bottom of the seventh for the walk-off win. Newman Catholic 13, Rockford 3. The Knights improved to 8-1 with a lopsided road victory on the back of senior Paige Leninger's three hits, including two doubles and two RBIs. Newman Catholic all but put the game away when it scored seven runs in the second inning to take a 10-1 lead. Knights pitchers allowed just two runs the rest of the way. Sophomore Leah Martinez and senior Haley Warman each had two hits for the Knights. Leninger earned the five-inning win, striking out four Rockford batters and allowing just four runs, two of which were unearned. Clear Lake 3, Hampton de Montcal 0. The Lions improved to 2-5 on the season to spoil the Bulldogs' senior night. Hampton de Montcal falls to 2-4. Central Springs 9, West Fork 0. The Panthers blew open a close game with five runs in the sixth inning and two more in the seventh to improve to 7-2. Freshman Carly Ryan paced Central Springs with three singles, while freshman Lizzie Hammond and junior Kylie Hampft each collected two hits. Sophomore Kaylee Fessler and freshman Cooper Clausen combined on a one-hitter and struck out 12 West Fork batters. Senior Rachel Hubka had the lone hit for West Fork and took the loss on the mound for the Warhawks. Bishop Garrigan 12, Garner Hayfield Ventura 0. The Golden Bears scored all of their runs in the first three innings to improve to 6-1 on the season. Senior Emma Fogarty led a 10-hit attack, collecting three hits for the Golden Bears, including two doubles. Senior Madison Meister and junior Bailey Meister each had two hits for the win. Senior pitcher Aubrey Altman threw a one-hit shutout in the three-inning game. Charles City 14, walk-on 7. The Comets scored six runs in the second inning and clinched the victory with four runs in the seventh inning on the road. Senior Lisbeth Pfizer and junior Sadie Gebel and Danny Reitz led Charles City's 13-hit barrage, collecting three hits apiece. Reitz pitched all seven innings, collecting the win for the 4-1 Comets. North Butler 11, Osage 1. The Green Devils were outplayed on the road, falling to the 3-3 Bearcats. After giving up five runs in the first inning and four more in the third, Osage could only muster one run in the fifth inning to fall to 3-5. Sophomore Ashley Halbach had two hits for the Green Devils, while three others collected a hit apiece. St. Ansgar 9, Nashua Plainfield 6. After falling behind 4-0 in the first inning, the Saints fought back to tie the game in the fourth and put it away with five runs in the last three innings. The Saints improved to 2-4 with the victory. Spirit Lake 16, Forest City 0. The St. Ansgar Indians were outplayed by the 6-1 Spirit Lake Indians. Forest City fell to 2-4. North Iowa 14, West Hancock 4. In a battle of winless teams, the Bisons came out victorious. The Eagles fell to 0-4 on the season, while North Iowa improved to 1-4. Riceville 16, Dunkerton 3. In the first of two road games on Wednesday, the Wildcats made quick work of Dunkerton, scoring 7 runs in the second inning and cruising to the victory. Freshman Madison Maurer and juniors Josie Ganson and Alexa Hauser each had 2 hits in the win. Freshman Morgan Fair earned the win and had 6 strikeouts. Don Bosco 4, Riceville 0. The Wildcats could only muster 4 hits and were shut out in their second road game on Wednesday. Riceville is 4-4 on the season. Algona 12, Iowa Falls Alden 2. The Bulldogs improved to 7-0 with the road win and gave the Cadets their first loss. Sophomore Laura Wegner went 4-for-4 for the Bulldogs, while senior Cameron Etherington collected 3 hits and earned the win on the mound, striking out 8 batters. Iowa school reopening plan doesn't require masks, distancing. Iowa education officials released guidelines Thursday that will allow schools to reopen to normal activities as of July 1st without requirements that students and teachers undergo health checks, wear face coverings, or observe social distancing in schools. The plan is in line with Governor Kim Reynolds' moves to allow public gatherings again after she had imposed restrictions to slow the spread of the coronavirus. Reynolds had initially ordered schools across the state to close in March and extended her action in April for the remainder of the school year. Jean Hesburgh, a spokeswoman for the Iowa State Education Association, the state's teachers union, said the plan doesn't comply with the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines for public places. It is a gamble and obscene that the governor and the Department of Education are gambling on the health and safety of our students, our staff, and school employees, Hesburgh said. This virus has demonstrated that it knows no bounds, and students can bring the virus home to families and ravage a family. ISEA President Mike Baranek released a statement urging school districts to create their own guidelines mandating face coverings, physical distancing, and other safety protocols. The union represents more than 50,000 teachers and other education professionals. The Iowa Department of Education made no public announcement on the guidelines, and Governor Kim Reynolds made no mention of it at a news conference she held earlier in the day. Her spokesman did not immediately respond to messages, but Education Department spokeswoman Heather Doe said the guidance was created with the Iowa Department of Public Health. She said local districts may require stricter measures based on local circumstances after consulting with a lawyer and local public health officials. The health and safety of students, families, administrators, teachers, and school staff will continue to be our number one priority, and we will continue to rely on public health experts to inform all decisions made, she said. Reynolds announced Thursday that she was updating an earlier coronavirus-related emergency proclamation that makes it clear that all school-related sports activities may resume. Reynolds made the announcement on the day that Principal Park in Des Moines announced a staff member tested positive for the coronavirus and high school baseball games scheduled for the minor league ballpark would be canceled. Reynolds said sports events can proceed with social distancing, good hygiene, and sanitizing equipment. These kids need the opportunity to find some normalcy in their lives, and it is a balance. We cannot shut down forever, she said. Iowa had an additional 462 positive cases on Thursday for a total of 27,062 total positive cases and 4 additional deaths, bringing the state total to 694. Reynolds noted, however, that some trends, including hospitalizations, deaths, and nursing home outbreaks, are declining. The school opening guidance was posted on the department's website on Thursday in preparation for beginning the school year, which for most schools occurs in mid or late August. It calls for staff or students who are sick to remain home, but doesn't require temperature checks or any other health screen before entry to schools, saying it's not a CDC recommendation because one symptom is not necessarily indicative of communicable disease. Requiring face coverings for all staff and students is not recommended, the guidance said, noting that schools should allow staff and students to use personal face coverings if they choose. Students should be taught not to criticize the use or non-use of facial coverings, according to the guidance. Schools should provide appropriate personal protective equipment and training for employees who have a medium to high risk of exposure or as determined by their job-related task, the advisory said. Schools may not be able to guarantee that physical distancing can be met in all school settings throughout the entire school day, during school activities, or with transportation, the document said. Schools are to post signs on how to stop the spread of illness and have routine cleaning practices of facilities, high-touch surface areas, cafeterias, concession stands, health offices, and buses following CDC guidance and any state or federal sanitation regulations. COVID-19 cases led to suspension of games at Iowa Ballpark. Two high school baseball games scheduled for Thursday at Principal Park in Des Moines were postponed after officials said a ballpark staff member tested positive for coronavirus. Officials with the park, which is home to the AAA minor league Iowa Cubs, said all staff at the ballpark will now undergo testing for COVID-19. Ankeny Christian and Orient Maxburg, as well as Indianola and Gilbert, had been scheduled to play at the park before park officials learned of an infected staffer. Officials have also informed four high school teams, Pella Christian, Grinnell, Ames, and Knoxville, that played there Wednesday about the positive test. Because Iowa is the only state to sponsor summer high school sports, it became the first state in the nation to resume high school athletics in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic when it allowed high school baseball games to begin earlier this month. The Cubs have yet to take the field at the park this year because of the outbreak. Instead, the stadium has been hosting high school baseball games. Once we get everybody tested and get the results of the staff, then we'll go back to scheduling events that are open to the public, Iowa Cubs president and general manager Sam Burnaby told the Des Moines Register. But until then, we can't get anybody here in the stadium. Two lawmakers, farmer, say Test Iowa mishandled their samples. Two lawmakers said Thursday that Iowa's coronavirus testing program mishandled their samples when they tried to get tested after the recent legislative session concluded. Senator Zach Walls and Representative Dave Jacoby, both Coralville Democrats, said they traveled separately to Cedar Rapids to get tested through Test Iowa, the $26 million program touted by Governor Kim Reynolds. Both wanted to make sure they were virus-free after interacting with colleagues and the public during the session. Their samples were taken on different days last week. They were each informed several days later that their samples were damaged or unusable and therefore had to be retested. Walls and Jacoby eventually tested negative after getting new tests. They said their experience illustrates some of the problems described by their constituents. A farmer from Iowa City who also was tested in Cedar Rapids last week, Molly Schindler, said that her first test also turned up damaged or unusable, and she had to travel again to get retested. She called the experience a big runaround. Test Iowa has faced a range of criticism, from the lack of accessibility of the drive-through sites to poor communication. At the same time, it has helped increase Iowa's testing capacity. Reynolds spokesman Pat Garrett said a very small percentage of individuals can expect to experience problems with their samples and will have the opportunity to be retested. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, June 25th, 2020. I'm your reader, Leanne Bakerose. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening. Thank you.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is Earth Date. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle. So it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For Earth Date, I'm Scott Tinker.
Earth Date is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more Earth Date stories at earthdate.org.